Hello, good evening, everybody. This week, Parshas Va'aleicha, we're going to start speaking about the halachas of refuah on Shabbos. Now, this is a rather broad subject, and this will take a couple of weeks because these shilas are shilas that, when they come up, you don't always have the luxury of asking a rav what the halacha is. They can happen in the middle of the night, or when you're in a place that a rav is not available, and not knowing what to do in these type of situations can cause a lot of stress. And besides, especially when it comes to pikuach nefesh, you have to know what to do. So we're going to discuss this in Yirtzeh Hashem over the next couple of weeks. And the way it works is that there are really four categories of, I guess you could call it four categories of sickness in halacha when it comes to Shabbos. And they are, number one is pikuach nefesh. And pikuach nefesh means a life-threatening situation or sickness or a injury. Anything that is life-threatening goes under pikuach nefesh. Number two is what's referred to as sakana aver, which means a risk to a limb. Chas v'shalom, a finger getting cut off, and more broadly, as we'll see, any damage to a limb or any part of a limb, which includes your face and anything like that, all goes under this category of risk or loss of a limb or use of a limb, which has its own halachas, its own unique halachas. The third category is chayla she'en vay sakana, a sick person who is not in any danger, but he is sick, and sick we categorize as someone who's in bed. Now, he's sick enough that he's in bed, and we'll talk, when we get into this category, we'll discuss exactly what qualifies someone as sick. Do they have to be in bed, or do other type of, what the extent of pain or extent of feeling weak qualifies a person already to be considered a chayla she'en vay sakana? We'll talk about children, when are they considered a chayla she'en vay sakana? That all goes under that category. And lastly, there's what Chazal referred to as a mechosh. A mechosh just means an ailment, something that bothers you, something that hurts. And obviously that is going to be the least allowance given on Shabbos, even if it can hurt a lot, but still the halachas of refuah apply, and it's us to do refuah on Shabbos. So now, just as a basic overview, well, this week in Yirtzeh Hashem we'll talk about pikuach nefesh, but the basic idea is that refuah, there's two aspects when it comes to doing a refuah on Shabbos. There's sometimes a question of doing a malacha, which means that in order to heal or in order to take care of an injury or of an ailment, you need to do a malacha. Sometimes it's a malacha d'oraisa, like driving to a hospital. Sometimes it's a malacha d'rabbanan, like asking a non-Jew to do something for you. Or sometimes there's other types of malachas d'rabbanan, like turning off a light is a malacha d'rabbanan, because there's no direct benefit from it. So that's one approach when it comes to refuah on Shabbos. You know, when are you allowed or not allowed to do a malacha? Then there's an all-inclusive isser called refuah b'Shabbos, which means the Chacham said you can't do anything which constitutes refuah on Shabbos, because Chazal were worried that you'll come to do a malacha if you are busy with refuah. The malacha in particular, which they had in mind, was grinding up herbs or grinding up medicines or various other malachas that are involved in the preparation of medicine. And therefore they said that anything that qualifies a refuah, whether it's medicinal or whether it's not medicinal, any type of refuah can't be done on Shabbos. And that goes beyond just giving medicine. It includes, other treatments which aren't specifically done with medicine. Those also are prohibited, midrabanan, because of this issur of refuah on Shabbos. So whenever, as we go through each one of the categories, obviously with the exception of pikuach nefesh, we will discuss what level is allowed and what level is not allowed. There's a difference. Some things you're allowed to do a malacha d'oraisa, some things you're allowed to do a malacha d'rabbanan, some things you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to do, and different things you can just do what's under the broad category of refuah, and other situations you can't do anything. So, talking about pikuach nefesh. So pikuach nefesh, simply put, is life-threatening situation. Now, what we need to understand, and this is very important to understand, is that Chazal's definition of life-threatening is very, very different than our definition of life-threatening. There are many things that we would consider non-life-threatening. It's not a question of life and death, not a threat to life. Yet Chazal said it, they are. For example, Chazal said that if a person has a very powerful toothache, that has to be treated like a life-threatening situation. We don't always understand why Chazal did look at it that way, but it seems that the general idea is that anything that can develop into a life-threatening situation is also treated like a life-threatening situation. And if you'll research, you'll see that you'll ask dentists, as you know I've done, you'll see that a toothache represents an infection. The infection is not in the greatest place. You don't want infections in your head area, because if they spread, they don't have to go very far before they can become very, very dangerous. And that's the reason why Chazal, where at the time there was absolutely no treatment for infection, being that it was a situation that could potentially lead to a spread of infection, which was life-threatening, it was considered life-threatening even at the point when it was really just a toothache. And likewise, you find in Chazal that they considered a cut from a piece of metal, they considered it life-threatening, and so on and so forth. So the idea is that Chazal don't need a person to be half-dead on the floor to be considered a life-threatening situation. Anything that has the potential to become a life-threatening situation, anything that can possibly become a life-threatening situation, even if it won't definitely become, it just has the possibility of becoming a life-threatening situation, is also considered life-threatening, and therefore not only are you allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, but rather you are obligated to be Mechal Shabbos, and if a person is not Mechal Shabbos, Chazal are very angry at him, and not only are they very angry at him, they're also very angry at the person's rabbi, because why didn't that person's rabbi teach him, or teach them, that you're supposed to be Mechal Shabbos in order to save a life? So, in order to address that, that's why I decided we'll be discussing this topic. Now, to give a basic idea of how to approach this, you know, if chas v'shalom, a person has a very intense pain, and they don't know what it is, or they have a child that's complaining of a very intense pain. So let's say it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and the child wakes up, and he's screaming unusually, and it really seems strange. You've never seen something so severe. But you don't know, right? You don't know what to do. Now, what would a person normally do in that situation during the week? Would they jump into the car and drive to the hospital? Perhaps. But more likely what they would do is they'd call a doctor. Now, calling a doctor, when you think about it, doesn't accomplish all that much. Calling a doctor you're calling it to see, maybe I don't have to worry about it, or I do have to worry about it and I have to go to the hospital. So you think, what's the point? Let me just go to the hospital if it's on Shabbos. Why do an extra malacha? It's not going to gain me anything. But the fact is that you do the same thing you would do during the week. If you're in a situation where you don't know what's going on and there's a possibility that the child, or yourself or whoever, is suffering from something that can be potentially life-threatening, you call the doctor. And the reason is because, simply, if you don't call the doctor, you're not really going to do what you're meant to do. Because people really are very reluctant to go to the hospital, especially in the middle of the night, especially if they know they're going to be sitting through an emergency room and et cetera, and they will only go if they have that push from the doctor who tells them to go. And in addition, a doctor can give you very valuable advice, what this might possibly be, what you should say in the emergency room, you know, how urgent you should treat it, and so on and so forth. He can often call ahead to the emergency room, so perhaps that might help speed up the process. So, well, for all those reasons and above, you definitely should call a doctor. That shouldn't be a topic. So the approach always is that whenever it's a situation where technically you think it warrants going to a hospital or warrants calling a doctor, then Shabbos should not be a concern. That shouldn't be holding you back from doing one or the other, and it should not weigh on your mind at all. That should be the approach when it comes to these questions. You should call the doctor. You should go to the hospital. If it's not, you know, something which you think is the second count, then you should rather call a taxi. It just makes it that much more simple. You know, if you go with a car, it's complicated. Do you park it? What do you do with it? Whatever, that just complicates things. But obviously, if there's not enough time, you just drive that car to the hospital, and you do what you need to do. Okay, Mirza Hashem, we'll talk about this more Next week there won't be a parasha shir, a conference call, but in Hashem, the following week we will continue with this topic. Parshas Ba'alecha is a fascinating parsha. There's an amazing assortment of events in this week's parsha. This week's parsha starts off with the mitzvah of lighting the menorah that was given to Aaron HaKohen, to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. It talks about the people who wanted to bring the Pesach Sheni, the people who were upset that they weren't able to bring the Pesach Rishon because they were Tamei, and they weren't able to bring it. And they were given the special mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. It talks about the people that complained that they don't have any meat, and they weren't happy with the man, and they said negative things about the man. And then was the story how the slav came, those birds that came, and people ate them, and as a result, they became sick. And then it goes on to say how Moshe Rabbeinu said that he can't handle Klal Yisrael alone anymore. And he then asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring people on to help him. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu assembled 70 Zekanim, who all became part of Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah and assisted him in leading Klal Yisrael. And then the last event in the parasha, a very famous event, where Miriam and Aaron HaKohen spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, and they had a complaint about one of the things he was doing, why he had separated from his wife. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished Miriam, and she got saras, the punishment for Lashon Hara. And she had to stay mechutz l'machana, away from the rest of Klal Yisrael for 7 days, but the whole Klal Yisrael waited for her, out of respect. And after 7 days, she was cured. Now this event was so pivotal that the Torah gives a special mitzvah to remember it. Zechar Asa Hashem leMiriam. You have to remember what happened to Miriam, and it's one of the things. And then after davening, the Sheish Chiris, six things you're supposed to say every day to remind yourself, and this is one of them. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam. So obviously, if it's an event, and it's an event that happened to Miriam, so even though we generally don't try, we try not to examine the Averis that are spoken about people that are the Gedolim and the Torah, we don't understand them, and obviously we don't begin to fathom the depth of what the Torah held these people accountable for. But since it's something we need to remember, obviously there's a number of important lessons that we have to learn from here. Now, one thing I want to focus on is that the story goes that Miriam, Vatadav Miriam, Aaron B'Maisha, that Miriam spoke to Aaron about Moshe Rabbeinu, and then seemingly Miriam was singled out for punishment. She was the one that got saras. She was the one that was punished with leprosy, and she was the one that the whole Klal had to wait for. And the question is that why her? I mean, it was her and Aaron together. What was specific about Miriam that she was the one that was punished, and why is she singled up, and why is she the one that we have to remember that she is Zechar Asa Hashem leMiriam? Why her? So in order to understand this, we have to understand what exactly was what was it that Hashem held against them. The way Chazal say, the way Rashi says, is that Miriam became aware of the fact that Moshe had separated from Tzipora, and she felt that it was not right. She felt that it was incorrect, and she was not aware that Moshe Rabbeinu had done this with the agreement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Hashem's approbation. She did know, according to some of Farshim, and she just thought it didn't apply anymore. Now that, like I said before, Moshe Rabbeinu had now had the assistance of 70 others in Canaan, he wasn't handling Klal Yisrael single-handedly, so at this point he should have returned to his wife. Whatever the pshat is, she held that this was incorrect. And therefore she wanted to right a wrong. She wanted to give Moshe Rabbeinu techacha, so to speak. She wanted to correct a sin which undoubtedly, were it to have been something wrong, Moshe Rabbeinu would have been very happy to hear and very happy to correct it. So what was it that she did wrong? So one of the Rishayim, the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, has a sefer called Drashas Ran, where he talks about this, and he says that they did two things wrong. One, he says, they shouldn't have spoken to each other about it. Rather, they should have questioned Moshe Rabbeinu, and they should have questioned him about what he was doing and why he was doing it. And secondly, he says, what they did wrong was that they equated themselves with Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, "Halagam bonu dibur Hashem." Hashem spoke to us too, and we never separated from our husbands or wives. They equated themselves with Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says that was a lack of respect. And that's why they were punished. Now, the point that we need to learn from here, then, is these two points, which are a very, very important lesson when approaching the concept of Lashon Hara and being judging other people, is that their first step, Chadaran says, should have rather than pass judgment upon Moshe Rabbeinu with what they saw and with what they heard and with the information that they had at hand, they should have questioned him and allowed him to explain himself. And this is an extremely important point. It's in a way, it's sort of thinking out of the box. A person by nature, and even very, very great people, assuming that they have all the information, because all the information is in front of them, then, after all, she was informed by Tzipora, so they couldn't get a better source of information than that, more closer to home than that. So she assumed she had all the information. She assumed she understood the halacha, what should be and what shouldn't be, and therefore came to the conclusion that something wrong was done. Chazal say, according to some Midrashim, Aaron and Miriam spoke about this right in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. It wasn't that they spoke about this privately. They spoke about it right in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, and yet still it was held against them. That's not the approach. The approach is to ask Moshe Rabbeinu. And that means to think that perhaps whatever conclusion I'm drawing is wrong. And instead of jumping to that conclusion, and instead of assuming that the information I have is complete, let's rather assume it's not. And let's look outside and try to see if there's another way to look at this. And the only way was to ask Moshe himself. That was the first issue and the first lesson that we need to take from here. And the second lesson, and this is explained by Rav Chassman in Yohel Ar, the Mashgiach of the yeshiva in the Kfar Chassidim, he said that the second Yisrael is that they equated themselves to Moshe Rabbeinu. He said they should not have done that because Hashem expects from every person to assume that the next Jew is greater than him. Rabbi Shmuel Salanter said, how was it that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to be honored Mikol Adam? How truly could he be a bigger honor than everybody else? I mean, he knew that Hashem was the one that spoke to him, the Torah was given through him, he took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, he did achievements that no other person did in history. How was he able to be honored Mikol Adam? Rav Galinsky asks, he says, he thinks the other way is fair. How can we possibly be Balei Gaiva? Don't we know how much is wrong with us? So he says that, Rav Galinsky is this muscle, he says, a professional photographer takes the picture, focuses on the subject, and everything else blurs out. He said that's the approach that Moshe Rabbeinu took. He says he focused on another yid, he only saw what was good about him. Everything else blurred out. Didn't focus on it. Didn't pay attention to it. And when he focused on himself, he just saw what he needed to grow, where he needed to get better. And therefore, he saw that everybody else was greater than him. And that's what the Torah expects from every person. Every yid, like Rav Chassman says, even the person who's ready to say Lashon Hara, is expected to say, hey, that person is greater than me. That person is better than me. He has better qualities than me. I can't speak about him. I don't know enough about him. I have to assume that he's doing what's right. I can't equate him to myself. I need to think he's better. And this is the second important lesson when it comes to Lashon Hara and judging other people, is that the assumption always has to be that that person has something that we don't have. And the last interesting point here is that Chazal say that this speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu was shelo b'kavana. It was unintentional. The Kli Yakar says that it means she really was talking about something else. She hadn't intended the conversation to go this way, and then it turned to Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is a hanhaga that many people, chashuva people have. I just heard from Rav Aaron Lapiansky just said, Rashiva just said that his mother used to say about the Rebbe and Kreiser, Rabbi Kreiser's mother, that she never allowed the conversation to turn to people. But at point when the conversation is about people, even unintentionally, it can lead to lashon hara. And that's why, that's another lesson that we have to learn, is that conversations can't be controlled necessarily as much as we'd like to. And the only way is to not start such a conversation to begin with. So the three lessons that we can learn here is Zecharyah, Shasa, Hashem, and Miriam. Why was it specifically Miriam? Apparently, Miriam was the one that jumped to this conclusion. Miriam was the one that made this decision that Moshe Rabbeinu was doing something wrong. And that is specifically the lesson that we need to take. Think outside the box. Don't assume that we have all the information. Number two, don't equate other people to ourselves. Let's assume that they're better. And number three, avoid the conversation to begin with. Don't begin the conversation in a topic that can possibly lead to speaking about other people. Have a good night and a good Shabbos.